Welcome to episode 116 of the Kraken Pod, a podcast for Seattle Kraken fans, those new and old to hockey, and hockey fans looking to have some fun. Along with you, we try to go into what lies beneath when it comes to everything Seattle Kraken and the NHL. Does my voice sound different? Do I sound different to you? This is Joey Cirillo. Jeff Januzik right now is actually tied up doing some family stuff, but it's all good. We have a very special episode for y'all this week. Nick Olchek, aka Nicky O, has joined the podcast to talk everything Seattle Kraken. We talk Dave Haxtell being relieved as head coach of the organization. We talk about the broadcasting deal with Amazon Prime and what's going to happen with that. We talk about his likes and dislikes for the 2024 Seattle Kraken season, off-season moves and expectations, the future of broadcasting, NHL playoff predictions. You named it. We talked about it. So let's get right into it. And we're going to go right into this interview. So here we go. Episode 116, a special one. Here's our interview with Nick Olchek. Welcome to the Kraken Pod. Let's go. All right, folks, he is here, returning to the podcast. This feels weird. Usually Jeff is the guy that does all the intros here. So I'm kind of just flying by the seat of my pants, but we have him. We have broadcaster extraordinaire, certified man rocket, and more important than anything else, we have member of the Kraken Pod fam, Nick Olchek, a.k.a. Nicky O. What's going on, man? Welcome back.
Joey, great to see you. Thanks a lot for having me on. Good to know that I didn't wear out my welcome too much the first time I was on a little bit earlier. I would assume Jeff has probably more important things to do than to talk to me, which is why he's not here. So that's okay. You and I are going to have a blast.
He's raking leaves. No, I'm messing with you. He's no, his son has a play, but I appreciate that. Jeff says hello. And no,
more important to support his son and his play. I'm sure it's going to go well.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to go great. Yeah, and also, man, like if anybody overstayed the welcome, it was us. I think we kept you for like an hour and change last time.
That's so okay. If it's talking hockey and it's talking Kraken, I got all day for it.
Okay, well, look at that. That's a great segue. And I'm just gonna say this because I feel like we have to rip the Band-Aid off here. There's a lot going on with the Seattle Kraken and with the NHL in general, but the interest, and this is kind of me lifting up the curtain here for a little bit for people that are listening. You and I, so I shot you a message a couple of days ago being like, hey, or maybe even like a week ago saying, hey, do you want to come on the podcast? We can talk about, you know, playoffs and whatnot. And you're like, yeah, I'm all for it. So yesterday, it is Tuesday, April 30th. So yesterday, the news breaks seemingly out of nowhere that Dave Haxtell has been relieved of his head coaching duties by Ron Francis. He is no longer the head coach of the Seattle Kraken. And along with that, it was also assistant head coach Paul McFarland. So I'm just having a moment, like a lot of fans were, where I'm just, I mean, to be frank, I'm just like, holy shit, like what just happened? So we always joke around a lot. Me and Jeff joke around a lot that like, we're kind of idiots. We, you know, we have our stats, we do our homework. But a lot of the stuff that we talk about are like vibe checks and body language and stuff like that. Throughout the course of the season, I talked about, and again, this is all speculation and me just being an idiot watching a lot of hockey. But I was like, I don't know, man. The body language of the team seems a little bit off. I was giving predictions that I believe that the locker room might have been lost a little. But you get to a point where it's like, he obviously finishes with this Seattle Kraken throughout the entire season. Nothing happens like right when the season basically like immediately ends. And so there was stuff online. I remember me and Jeff looking at it and we were talking. He's like, no, like Hack is going to be around, you know, for next season, because if it would have happened, it would have happened by now. You know, there's a lot of moving parts with the organization. Not everything falls on the head coach's shoulders. Oftentimes it can, et cetera. This is all, you know, and I also would be remiss to say, and then there's an ESPN report by Emily Kaplan talk about a handful of players coming out. discussing displeasure with Dave Haxtell. This is all a very, very roundabout way of saying this is a very fluid situation. It's a sensitive situation, and it seems like there are still a lot of moving parts. What can, if anything, what can you share with us regarding this situation as it currently stands?
Well, I'm very fortunate to, during the season, be around the locker room and have the incredible honor of interacting with elite level athletes, hockey players in the National Hockey League, players that play for the Kraken, as well as the training staff, the people that work around the rinks, and the coaching staff as well. And I would be remiss if I did not start by saying every interaction I ever had with Dave Haxtell was incredibly positively impactful. He treated me with incredible respect. I think he's a hell of a coach. I don't think he's going to be out of a job for too much longer. And for everything that he did for this city, I think he is owed a round of applause and then some. As far as how the reports go, the reason for the firing, all of that really at the end of the day is speculation. I wouldn't say I'm, you know, pouring gasoline or water on anything with all due respect, but, you know, no one really knows unless it's the people that made the decision, general manager Ron Francis. And look, It's a results-based business, and I think the one thing that this decision did make pretty clear, as Ron Francis had said in his presser the other day, is that, you know, this is going to send a message to the players, to the team, to everybody that, you know, not making the playoffs is unacceptable. So I think the standard has very much been set. And I personally want to wish all the best, to Dave Haxtell, his family, as well as Paul McFarland, and his wife and his family too. So look, these are smart hockey people. And I think we all saw, the other day that, you know, it wasn't, an easy decision to make, for whatever the eventual reasons were. So look, it's, as I said earlier, it's a results-based business, and now looking forward, there's going to be a lot of great coaching options out there, perhaps coaches that are currently coaching right now that could come in and do a great job, or coaches that are currently unemployed, maybe coaches that are in the minor leagues. So, you know, I will end on five important words that I live by and that I think the organization lives by, and that's trust in general man. Excuse me. Let me rephrase that here. I trust in Ron Francis. So, you know, that's certainly he's got a plan. He's got a vision. And this was just one step along the way in trying to get the Kraken back into the playoffs.
I love it. A thing that Jeff and I have made up, because, again, we are idiots, is WWRD. What would Ronnie do? We've been calling him the Ron Father now for the past couple of years. Like, we're just fans, right? And we trust our general manager. I don't expect you to comment on this, but your comment about the presser was interesting because, again, me being a body language guy, Ron's body language, and again, speculating, showed me that this was not something he wanted to do. Now, granted, I really doubt, unless you're a psychopath, that you go out there being like, can't wait to fire this person today. But it just didn't look like something that, that he was prepared to do or really wanting to do. So moving on, and I appreciate that. I think your insights were great.
It's not easy too, Joey. You know, it's not easy.
No.
In sports and business, any walk of life, when you know, you wish someone well and wish them on their way, you know, whether you love them, whether you don't love them, whatever the case is, it's never easy because you know you're impacting a person as well as their family. So, you know, like I said, I can't say it enough. And to put a bow on this is for what Dave Haxtell did for this city and for this team, to be the very first coach over 3 years where you kind of saw an incredible ascension to what the team did last year, getting all the way to the playoffs. And then last year, you know, the way that it went. So, look, as I said, it's a results-based business. Ron Francis is there to make those decisions. And I will also say, too, you heard a lot about the evaluation process. Like, this isn't just a decision that was happened in one day. And in the evaluation process after the season, the management team, the front office staff, they look at everything. They look at players. They look at coaches. They look at trainers. They look at everything, minor leagues, National Hockey League, pro scouting in North America, over in Europe. So there is kind of a full organizational evaluation that is done. And like I said, they thought this was the best decision to make. And all we can do is support the team and hope that the best is yet to come.
Speaking of the team, now moving on past this topic, like just looking at the team on its own, when you're looking at it and you're evaluating the 2023-2024 Seattle Kraken, what were your likes and what were your dislikes about this squad?
Well, I want to start off by saying a stat that was pretty relevant to this year is that the Kraken were the only team who ranked in the top 10 defensively that did not make the playoffs. So that tells me two things. One, defensively, it was a real strong suit for the team this year. And when I think about the defense, you've got to start in the blue paint, in between the pipes. And for Philip Grubauer's year, had some injuries, but man, oh man, when he came back, he was lights out towards the end of the season. And amidst his injury, I think we had a guy that came in and solidified himself as a goaltender that belongs in the National Hockey League. And it sure looks like the tandem moving forward is going to be Philip Grubauer and the guy I was speaking about, that being Joey Decord. So you certainly have to start there. And on more games than not, and sure, each of those guys had a game or two or a couple of games where maybe they were not at their very best. But the vast, and I mean the vast majority of games, each of those goaltenders gave the Kraken a chance to win. Then you go out a little bit further from the goaltending position, and you've got the D. And a year that was also impacted injury-wise for Vince Dunn, who, when you look at his games played to his points produced, pretty darn good for Dunner on the offensive side. And a guy that I don't know if he gets enough credit for the fire that he brings, the competitiveness. And when he snaps, look out. I mean, like, he's got a real mean streak in him.
I love
when he sees his teammate get taken liberty on or something happens to him. He's not afraid to drop the mitts, not afraid to get aggressive, which is great. But unfortunately, had some injuries in that awful hit he took from Martin Pospisil in Calgary. And he came back, played one or two games, and then was out the rest of the year. So hopefully he's able to heal up 100% and be ready to go come training camp. That sounds like what will be the case as far as the diagnostics that were given out towards the end of the year as far as the injury for him. Yeah. Because anything in the head or neck or upper body area, that's you know, you can imagine it's pretty sensitive. And his normal D partner, Adam Larson, look, another strong year for Lars. And you always know what you're going to get from him. And the thing I think is maybe underappreciated about his game is he's got some offensive flair. And when he's feeling good and he's got that swagger going and he starts to get those feet moving and he's carrying the puck, like it's pretty exciting to watch because you got players that bring people out of their seats. Well, he's a guy that when you can kind of see him getting some speed going kind of around his blue line and he's ready to jet up ice or jump into the play to turn a 2-on-2 into a 3-on-2 as kind of that second wave of offense coming. You know, he is an exciting player to watch. But, you know, obviously being more of a stay-at-home D, and he's going to be very important, as we know, for this team for a long time moving forward. And the second pair, Jamie Oleksiak and Will Borgen, again, strong all year. The big rig, I mean, he's just a shot-blocking machine. He's going to take up space. He's got a great stick positioning-wise. And Will Borgen, who I think he should really be the poster child for players that come into the league and don't play a lot right away. For whatever reason, they maybe just aren't as comfortable yet or not as developed as where they need to be. He only played 36 games in his first year with the Kraken, then year two played all 82. And this last year played a ton of games as well and has really become a very important part of this team, physicality-wise, defending off the rush, and has really been dependable in every single situation, especially in the D zone. And I would be... You know, I couldn't forgive myself if I did bring up Riker Evans also on the back end in the great year that he had too. Anytime it's your first year in the National Hockey League, especially as a D, there's a lot to adjust to. because though the American Hockey League is a great league, a great developmental league with high skill and high competitiveness, the NHL is another step in speed and physicality and, of course, skill. And I thought that he handled it really well. And aside from just the on ice, just watching the interviews that he gave as the year went on, he just got more swagger. He got more confident. And he started to be a little bit more himself. And you heard Dunner talk about him at the end of the year. Like, the guys kind of don't really have him figured out yet because he's kind of he's an interesting cat.
Loving those comments.
Yeah, right. So, and in the dealings I've been able to have with him, incredibly respectful, very insightful with what he says, how he says it. And he's just the kind of guy I think that just – He knows the job. He's here to do a job. He's going to have fun, and he's going to give his all each and every game. So it really was nice to see the maturation process for him. So as far as defensively, to your question, that was a real strength this year. Now, on the flip side, things that are going to have to improve next year, and something I felt hampered the team a little bit this year, was the offensive side. And I know it's obvious, but you had some players with down years. You had some guys that struggled. And I think if you want to be completely honest, a couple guys that were really snake bitten too. And I look at a guy like Yanni Gord, who I think he ended up with like 13 or 14 goals, somewhere around there. And there were a lot of cases where he had chances, but the puck was just bouncing on his stick, or he hit the post, or uncharacteristically put it wide, but he was doing all the right things.
I was going to say, do you think it was self-inflicted? That's what I was curious about.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those years for a guy like Yanni. And
okay,
I mean, look, sometimes you do everything right, right? It's kind of like in life. You do everything right, and you just can't catch a break sometimes. And I feel like that's kind of what it was offensively for, a lot of these guys this year. The power play had its ups and downs. It struggled for stretches at times. And, that'll obviously be something that changes with the coaching change going into next year. What's it going to look like? Where's the personnel going to be? Mm-hmm. I really loved when a guy like Eli Tolvanen was on his one-timer side, because you feed a guy like that 10 one-timers, he's probably going to put 8 on the net, and you got a pretty damn good percentage that I would say maybe 2 of those are going to go in. And over a long course of a season, you're going to really like the returns there. So I know it's been a little bit long-winded here on the offensive side.
I love it. Please lay it all on me. I'm soaking this up.
I just felt offensively there wasn't enough getting to the inside.
I agree.
And they have players that can do that, right? I mean, they have players that have shown, especially the year before this last year, when they went to the playoffs, they showed that they could score from the inside, getting to the inside, but it really is a mindset type of thing of, okay, there's 2 routes to get to the net. If I'm entering the zone wide, I can bust my rear end, go around the net, or I can try and get around the D and then go right to the net. Or if you're the player that doesn't have the puck and you're kind of the middle lane drive, are you going to go right to the net and stop, or are you going to go to the net and kind of fly by? So I just felt that, and I know we're going to end up talking about Shane Wright, but I think that he did a real nice job of when he came up and played towards the end of the season there.
You talk about a guy
that was just like a magnet at the net front. That was really nice to see, and that's going to have to be something I think that the team offensively does a lot more next year. But I'm counting on bounce back years for a lot of these players, and we'll see what Ron Francis and his staff do in the offseason to bring in via free agency or trade some other offensive pieces that'll hopefully bolster what was a bit lacking last year.
I love it. On the defensive, you made a comment about Ryker Evans, and you brought up what Vince Dunn said, a.k.a. the Dundertaker. I'm going to keep saying that until it's adopted. I really like that comment. I'm happy you pointed it out. So we were fortunate enough. We had Ryker on the podcast, and I felt the same exact way. And this is not a knock on him by any means. I'm basically just echoing what the Dundertaker said, and that's that. He's a quiet dude. It was a little hard to get some stuff out of him. But what really stuck out to me after talking with him were, one, just an all-around solid dude. Like, just you can tell he's a great dude, comes from a really good family. He just loves to play hockey.
Yeah.
And the second thing that really stood out to me is he is confident as shit. Like, he's got, like, the silent swag where he's just, like, he's very confident in his game.
That's what I was going to mention. I was going to say quiet confidence or silent swag, like you had said. And that's something I think that all the really good players have a piece of. And there's a confidence there. It's not an arrogance. It's a confidence of, aside from just the playing aspect of it, it's I'm here and I know I belong.
Yeah.
And that's not something you just flip on with a switch. It's trust from the coach. It's trust from management. And most importantly, it's trust from the reps that you get playing game after game, getting opportunity on the power play after opportunity on the power play, playing 16, 17, 18, 19 minutes a night consistently. When you do that long enough and you realize, I thought I was pretty good, but damn, I'm pretty darn good in the National Hockey League too. That's how you earn that confidence within yourself. And I really do think he has done that to a T so far in the games that he's played.
Agree. And speaking of getting some time on ice and mentioning Shane Wright, does he ever see the AHL again after this season?
Well, look, I mean, if he continues to play like he did when he came up and joined the Kraken, I think he will continue to earn his spot for the Kraken, being in the lineup consistently. And we'll see how things come to fruition at camp. But I would predict and I would imagine him being on the opening day roster next year. And look, there's still growing to do, as there is with any young player, not even 21 years old yet. But I will step back and look at this from 30,000 feet and say, when we try to diagnose how good is he, how much better is he than his first training camp, I try to look at it in as a sequence of every time we've seen him play for the Kraken, he's gotten better. Yeah. There's been an aspect of his game that has gotten better, whether it's confidence with the puck, having that poise to be able to make plays, not feeling like the puck is a grenade with the pin pulled out, I got to get rid of it right away, but having that balance between holding on to it and then knowing when, hey, I probably just got to chip the puck and not try and make a move through a guy. So I think his confidence with the puck has gotten better. Secondly, I would say putting himself in better spots, avoiding hits, but also knowing and having that on-ice awareness, which is something that you really just can't teach. You either have awareness on the ice or you don't, and you either have it at an elite level or kind of an average level, which is what separates the great goal scorers from the guys who just kind of score inconsistently, because you know the right areas to go, where if the puck's at the point, you're either going to put yourself in a spot on the flank or in the slot to try and tip it, or you're going right to the net. And it's awareness of where the puck is, where your teammates are, and where the opponent is, and to take all of that into your brain and make split-second decisions of, should I go there? Should I go around this guy? Should I support the puck carrier? Should I go right to the net? I mean, all of that going on, I have just seen his decision-making get better. His shot, there were a couple of – I think he hit – I know one for sure. I remember on the power play at one of the last home games of the year where he just absolutely rung one right off the pipe. I mean, it was a bullet of a shot. There was a subtle little screen. He was on his strong side, and he took a stride down. He got the pass from the point, took one stride to the net. And I'll tell you what, that puck was on and off his stick in a flash, and it went right off the far side post. So I think his shot is definitely another real big strength for him. But I'm going to end this little spiel with saying, well, where do I think he's going to make his money? Some people go to the bank to cash their check. Well, Shane Wright goes right to the net. And I think that if he wants to be an impactful player, as I think he can be, the net, he's got to make a very comfortable place for him. And that was something that I saw. Now, to dive a little bit deeper into that, is that you're not just going to the net just to go there and to hang around. You're trying to take away the goalie's eyes with a screen. You're trying to create some chaos. But also, it's not just going there and just like planting roots into the ice. It's also having the ability and the knowledge to, if you go there and it's a little bit crowded and say the puck is on the sidewall and maybe there's not a direct lane to the net, okay, well, maybe if I'm Shane in that situation, I'm going to kind of use my stick or my hands to push off a defender, pull out a couple of feet in front of the net or to the side of the net to create some space, and then maybe I get open and I get a pass and you got a backdoor tap in.
Yep.
So there's a lot of those situations where the great players in the league, they're like, oh my gosh, like easiest goal that the player is ever going to score because it was a backdoor tap in. It was a great pass, yes. But what that goal scorer did was put himself in that spot, because if you just go to net and stay there, while that's good in some situations, others you just got to read the room and make the right play. And that was something I felt Shane began to do. But it was a net front presence for me that I think was as impressive as any other skill that he showed. And look, I mean, he's going to be an important part of this team moving forward. It'll be another big summer for him of training, right? Bigger, faster, stronger. And I sincerely hope that that he comes next year and he's ready to go and he's ready to make an impact from day one.
Pavelski is the guy I was thinking about while you were talking about that. I'm just like, that's a dude that, yeah, that's the man. You can mirror your game after that guy. There's a reason why Dallas is in the playoffs right now. And I'm not just saying it's all him, but when he's out there doing like 100 tip-ins and showing guys how to play in front of the net, and you know, he has the rookies and the younger guys out there, and now they're doing the same thing with him every single day. You get those reps in. Eventually, you start doing it in games, and then you become a team that can make some serious noise and play for a championship. So it makes sense.
The game right now is as fast as it's ever been.
Yeah,
and I think Joe Pavelski in particular is a great example of a guy that you don't correlate speed with his game, but it's his hockey IQ. Mm-hmm. And the smarts of knowing where to be, where not to be, and most importantly, when to be there. And as you had mentioned, the tipping, the redirecting, the causing chaos at the net, he does that better, I think, than any player in the league.
I agree.
And there's a reason why at the ripe old age in the late 30s, he is in the league and he's impactful. And I think he's got plenty of more good years left in him for his day-to-day approach of playing not just games, but practice. And look, you don't last that long if you don't take care of your body.
Yeah.
And you mentioned young guys learning from him. I think having great veterans in your room is as important of a feature of a team as there is, because it's real easy for young players at any level, junior, college, youth hockey, especially professional hockey, when you got young skilled players that think they got the world in their hands, and you don't have any veterans that have been around and they've been in just about every experience you can, sometimes those young guys are gonna slip and they're gonna form bad habits. But to have a guy like that, or in the Kraken's point of view, to have a guy like Jordan Eberle, guys that have been around a long time, that is so important to have. And you know, Joe Pavelski certainly is one of the very best.
Yeah, and to take it back even more so to the Seattle Kraken, it's why I was such a big fan of the Dumoulin signing in the offseason. I was like, this is the guy I want in my locker room. Right. This is the guy I want on my team, not just from what he can do on the ice, but that veteran presence. Yeah. Someone who's won it all, knows what it takes, and can help out the younger guys. So, man, there's so much to digest there. You know what? I don't even have this written down, but I'm going to have to ask you, because it's one of my favorite things from this season. And I'll be honest, it wasn't a lot from this season I walked away from being like, man, that was awesome. So one of the things I really enjoyed about the 2023-2024 Seattle Kraken season was what I call the Ty Karche villain arc. This dude's game has morphed, evolved, whatever you want to call it, into a completely different level. We were fortunate enough where we had a chance to talk to him. I fell in love with the kid. He's super personable. He's like the opposite of like Riker when it comes to that. Like, he'll talk about anything. I think we caught him at a coffee shop at his hometown, and he was just so nice. But then you see him out on the ice, like he's developing like this grit that I honestly thought that the Seattle Kraken was, maybe is, still lacking. And for him to go out there and kind of take it upon himself to be the guy who is, you know, I'm going to defend my teammates, I'm going to make the plays, you know, that might hurt a little bit, I'm going to get banged up, I'm going to put my body on the line. And that's not taking away from the skill set that he brings as well. Overall, I fell in love even more so with his game. I think he's a permanent fixture on this roster. What did you see from Ty Karche over the course of this season and the way his game evolved?
He is the type of guy that if he's not scoring, or he's not producing, if he's going through a tough stretch, or the puck just isn't finding him during the game, which is rare, but it happens on occasion to everybody, even the great players, he has the tools to be and to have an impact on the game. There are some players in every walk of life, some people in every walk of life, where if the reason you're working or the reason you're playing, because you're an offensive player, is if you're not scoring, you better be doing something to help the team.
Yeah.
And Ty, I think for me, is the definition of a player that if the offense isn't coming, he's going to go out there and he's going to get you 7 hits. And the best part about it, Joey, is even if he is scoring, he's going to go get you 8 hits. Like, he just has
exactly
incredible reads of – and look, to be an effective body checker and to be a physical player, there's a lot of calculating you got to do in your brain of judging the speed of the other player, judging how quickly the puck is going to get off of their stick or when they're going to get the puck, because you don't want to take a penalty. And it's not like Ty takes a ton of penalties at all, which is
context matters. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And I think that's why it's even more impressive, because look, if he's getting 38 hits a game, but he's getting 5 penalties, it's like, well, what's even the point? Mm-hmm. So he does it in a clean and effective way where when he's on the ice, he's doing something to help the team. A block shot, a great forecheck. I think he is one of the top forecheckers on this team for all of those reasons. I think he has good speed. It's the anticipation of that defenseman's going back for a puck. I got probably an idea that I think he's going to try and go D to D, so I'm going to cheat to that. And, well, if I'm a little close to him as the first forward in, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to lay the body on him and maybe create a 50-50 battle. So it's the expert forechecking, the physicality, going to the net without the puck, and then when he does have it, not afraid to drive right to the paint and make something happen. And we saw this in the first goal he scored in the playoffs last year. But he's got a hell of a shot, and he can really zip it. And his shot reminds me a lot of Jared McCann's.
Interesting.
It just zips right off of his stick.
Okay.
I've talked to a couple of goalies that have faced his shots, and sometimes you're just kind of left like looking like, oh, it just went by me, you know.
Yeah,
just
there are some already happening.
Yeah, right. Because it's like you hear the sound and the puck's already in the net. It's like, okay, sure, I didn't really have a chance there. So yeah. I think his ability to shoot the puck as well is a real skill set. And when you got him in a one-on-one situation with a goaltender, I really like my chances. So I just think he really does kind of have the total package. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, the thing that he does that I admire most is that he plays hard every game. But if it's a hard game for him with the puck, he's going to do something to help the team. And I think if there were more Ty Cartiers in the world, it'd be a better place.
Could not agree more. Man, I almost wish we disagreed on something. All right. So I'm really excited. I think, you know, I can't speak for every Seattle Kraken fan out there, but I'm excited because, you know, the NHL playoffs are going on right now. And as much as it sucks to not have our team to root for, Jeff and I talked about for a number of months how we believed that this offseason was going to be a monster offseason for the Seattle Kraken. And not just because of the results of this season being disappointing. It was like a myriad of things and factors that we were taking a look at, just like the organization, I'm sure, has done very well. One thing that has changed that I have not had a chance to really talk to anyone about, so I get the privilege of doing it with you, is not just the actual team on the ice is changing, but the broadcasting is changing as well. So the Seattle Kraken have parted ways with Root Sports. It's not like a secret. This has been something that has been talked about for months. You know, I don't really need to go into details about your now former employer. It's kind of funny because Jeff is not from Washington State, unlike myself. So he's not familiar with like the local broadcasting channels. So when I'm talking to him, he kept calling it King Kong Dong. And he was like, oh, you should ask Nick about like the King Kong Dong broadcast. I'm like, that's not what it's called, man. Like, you can't start calling it that. So, but games are going to be broadcast on Kong 5, which is the NBC affiliate of the Seattle Kraken. Now, Tegna, I also believe, is handling the broadcasting. Then on top of that, you have Amazon Prime, who will be live streaming the games for Washington, Oregon, in Alaska, which means that I just need to get a VPN. But now, so my big thing with you is I saw that the reason I'm bringing it up is because, one, I want to get your input on it. And also, is there a way for you to break this down to someone who's kind of an idiot like myself? Because I'm like, wait, there's 3-4 different partners in here. What's going on? Because when I look at it, though, and I zoom out, like you say, from 30,000 feet, I believe this is a great thing for Seattle Kraken fans. And by the way, I think I speak on behalf of the majority, if not everyone, when I say congrats. We're beyond freaking pumped that you are coming back. Yeah, it's just overall just very, very, very good things.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for all of us, the entire organization, the fans, and especially the broadcasters, because now we will have the opportunity to be in front of more eyes and in more homes and on more phones than ever before. And I would love to start, as I feel is deserved, to give absolute kudos, absolute respect, and the utmost applause to what Root Sports did in their coverage for the Kraken for the first 3 years. And I was very fortunate to come in year two. I was not around in the first year, but when I came in the second year, as a broadcaster, whenever you change markets, there's two things that you hope for. You hope first that you're going to like the people you work for and work around. And you're also going to hope that the fans take a liking to you for whatever reason it is. And the former, when I came in, Root Sports made me feel incredibly comfortable to be able to do the best job that I could do. The executive producer there, John Bradford, put me in positions to succeed, along with Tom Glasgow and Ross Fletcher and Allison Lucan and Piper Shaw. And obviously the in-game guys, Johnny Forslund, my dad, Eddie Olchek, and JT Brown. And look, I mean, it's an award-winning broadcast under Root Sports, and we are very, very proud of that. And a lot of those incredible people over there, behind-the-scenes people that you don't know their names, they were, in my eyes, the reason why we were as successful as we were. And having had a prior life working in a production room, in a production truck, I know how important those people are. So Root Sports did an incredible job. And I think it's just the times are changing. A lot of people are cutting the cord. A lot of people are going the other way with advanced cable or higher paid cable packages, whatever the case may be. So, I have a lot of respect for the people at Root Sports and certainly thank them for the incredible positions that they put me in and the support that they gave me and what they provided to Kraken Nation for the first 3 years. But look, as I said, times change, and this broadcast deal is groundbreaking. And I'll get to the groundbreaking part, but to be able to get the product and the team and the players and the broadcasters in front of more eyes than ever, I do think it is incredibly important to have it on free over-the-air cable, and that's what's going to be the case. And the huge player here is Tegna, who have helped orchestrate everything here and Amazon Prime too. So the breakdown of it will be, before I give the numbers as to how many games are going to be on the local channels, the national rights holders for the NHL are TNT and ESPN. Mm-hmm. Now, each team in the NHL can have up to a maximum of 13 games of theirs, of the 82-game season. 13 games can be chosen to be broadcasted nationally.
Yeah.
So say ESPN wants 10 Kraken games, TNT wants 3. Those games will be on either ESPN or TNT. They will not be broadcasted by us here with the Kraken.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, there are some teams in the league that don't get all 13 for whatever reason, the market size, how the team's doing, whatever the case may be. But all of those are taken into consideration when the schedule is made and when the rights holders want to make their decisions. So with the Kraken being a great market and a lot of buzz around the team, you would assume that, well, probably the rights holders are going to want to choose 13 of those games, probably. So then that leaves you with what, Joey? Is it 69 games, right? Is my math correct?
82. Yeah, you're right. There you go. Yeah.
I think I was awful at math back in school. I use my fingers and toes to count now. Yeah. So,
well, listen, everything I kept reading, see, you're asking me about math questions. I can't even freaking talk. Everything I was reading was saying 70 plus games. But here's the thing, is that the schedule for the broadcasting for the now hasn't been determined yet, because the schedule for next season has to come out. And then those games are cherry picked, like you said, based off of market, how the team's doing, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I pick up exactly where you're at, and I agree. Yeah.
And the 70 plus, I think, comes from the anticipation of doing preseason games as well. Yes. And so that would obviously play a factor there.
I believe first round of playoffs if the Kraken make it as well, correct?
Hey, yes, exactly. So the first round, every team that makes the first round, the local networks and the local broadcasters will put on the broadcast. Anything beyond the first round, then that goes to strictly national broadcasted. So from my understanding is that the vast majority of games, all games on a local TV will be on Kong, and a select number of games then simulcasted on King 5.
Yes. King 5, not Kong. Yeah. Okay. I mixed that up. My bad.
And that's okay. And the anybody who wants to watch it on their phone, on their computer, on their iPad. I've seen people watching TV on their car dashboard screens. I don't know how that's possible, but I've seen it before. I don't recommend that at all. I don't recommend it unless you're in an autopilot situation. But you are going to be able to have the team and the games and the content at your fingertips at all times. And I think that's the greatest part about it. And being around town here in Bellevue, in Seattle, all around the Seattle area, I've been very fortunate to make a lot of friends and meet a lot of people. And in the last 2 years since I've been here, a lot of people that didn't know how to watch. A lot of people didn't have cable. And
it's a problem. Just, it's been a problem out there.
And that's just the way of the world. So now a lot of these folks that are reaching back out to me asking me what this means, all I tell them is now there's no excuse. You have no excuse not to watch. You're going to have it. You can go get a close to free TV antenna from a store, and you can get the first 10 channels, and the games are going to be on there. Yep. Or pretty much every person and their mother here in the Pacific Northwest has Amazon Prime, and you're going to be able to watch the games there here in Washington, in Oregon, and Alaska. So look, this is groundbreaking too, because there has never before been a National Hockey League team that is partnered directly with a streaming service. And that's what the Kraken are doing now with Amazon Prime. So incredible relationships and bonds between organizations, between outlets, that now puts the Kraken in more homes and in more ears and in front of more eyes than ever before. And that's all we want. We want to allow access to anybody who wants. The casual fan, the hardcore fan, someone who's channel surfing, if they see a hockey game on TV, we want them to tune in. So, and I will say too, this is not something that just comes together overnight.
No, there's a lot. Speaking of moving parts, we're going to talk about that. Holy crap.
It's an incredibly sophisticated situation. And with the Kraken, CEO Todd Leitwicki, President Victor DeBonis, Katie Townsend, Rob Lampman, and the entire upper echelon of folks that run the organization had to put in a lot of work to be able to get everybody satisfied and happy to where it is and to where it makes sense. And of course, all the folks at Kong and King and Amazon too, which there's obviously an incredible relationship between the Kraken and Amazon here in Seattle. So there's a lot of moving parts. There's still things to be fleshed out, of course. And so it's a fluid process, as you had said a little bit earlier, Joey, but an incredibly exciting time because now we're going to be able to be more accessible to people that want to watch Kraken hockey. And at the end of the day, that's all we want.
I was just thinking really quickly on how this is why I love talking to you. Just you're a very humble man. I just love how and you're absolutely right. So you're talking about Root Sports and the people behind the scenes and how it. And they make your job easier because they work so hard and, you know, you might not know of them, but they are kind of what makes that whole machine run, and you're grateful for your time there. But you also won your first Emmy, right? I mean, like, so, I mean, that's pretty cool. And I'm sure that you thanked a lot of people at the time too, but I don't want to skimp over that. So I had to call you out on that. So,
yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's something that, you know, I think it's easy to look inward. But I do think it's easier for me to look outward and to look around at all the people, the producers, the directors, the editors, the associate producers, the stage managers, the engineers. I mean, there is a lot of people.
Yeah.
The janitors at the Root Sports Studio. I mean, there's a lot of people that go into an award-winning product, and I couldn't be more proud to see my Emmy and have it say Root Sports. And I think we're up for another one. We're another nominated pregame show for the Emmy Awards here coming up, I think, in a couple of months in June. So hopefully we'll be able to go out with a bang and add one more to the shelf. But, you know, awards are not possible without the people who are the foundation. And I am an incredible believer is that the folks behind the camera, speaking from someone who is on camera, I think the people behind the camera are more important, because at the end of the day, Joey, if we want to be honest and we want to be frank, yeah. I mean, without them, we're not on air. So, I mean, yeah. You just want to look at it with utter simplicity. That's what it is. You know, having had experience behind the camera and working years in production rooms and production trucks, those days are long. I mean, you're there for hours. And two, the other thing at Root, right, they had the Mariners games too. So yes. You think back last year when we were doing playoff hockey, when the baseball season started, you got people in the studio that are getting there for a baseball game in the afternoon. And it's not like the game's at 1 and the people show up at noon. I mean, they got to be there at 6:37 in the morning, and then they got to stay there for after the baseball game and then work the Kraken game too. So they're pulling 6 a.m. days to getting out of there at 11:30 or midnight and going home and then doing the same thing the next day. So to shine a light on those folks is incredibly important. And like I said, I know I wouldn't be as good of a broadcaster if I didn't work for those people there, starting with John Pratt Bradford, who is the executive producer there. So incredible times at Root Sports. But as I said, you know, incredibly, incredibly excited moving forward to be working and have the production be in-house with the Kraken.
Yeah, I love. I mean, both those teams, the Mariners and the Kraken, but I'm just a Seattle sports fan diehard since I was born. You could not pay me enough money to do that job back to back. Like, they're like, yeah, you got to sit in a truck for 18 hours a day. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
You got to really love it. You got
to,
you have to really
love your job. All right. So moving forward, is it your off season now? Are you watching a lot of playoff hockey? And if so, I need to hear it from you really quick. NHL playoff predictions. Do you have a rooting interest? Do you have teams that you think are going to make it? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I've actually got the Boston-Toronto game on behind me right now. And depending on what time that this podcast goes out onto the airwaves, it's watching game five. Mm-hmm. And it's the Bruins are up in the series.
Yeah, Matthews did not play tonight either.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of drama around Toronto.
Toronto, no.
Hey, that's a hell of a market. And
no, I know. Hey, listen, they care a lot.
Yeah. You gotta have thick skin. And it's going into the third period right now. 1-1 is the score, so looking like it's a pretty good game. And look, I mean, the Leafs, if they don't win, their season's over, and there will be a lot of changes in that organization this summer. You would assume. So as far as my schedule before getting into the Stanley Cup playoff predictions, very fortunate to work for NHL Radio for the playoffs and do a certain number of games.
Love it.
For Sports USA, which is the rights holder for NHL Radio. Mm-hmm. And Larry Kahn, who runs Sports USA, his wife Nancy and son Brandon, have been gracious enough to have me over the last couple of years do Winter Classics, do Stadium Series games during the season, and then have the honor to work with them as a sideline reporter and color analyst for a certain number of games for the playoffs. I'm really excited to be able to do that. Likely going to do a game or two in the second round and then be working one of the conference finals, either the West or the East. for my own, skin pigmentation and enjoying warm weather. I'm yes. hoping for maybe like a, if I'm put on the Western Conference Final Series, maybe like a Vegas LA.
Okay.
Or like a Vegas Dallas. Or
just, all right.
Because I don't mind a little sun and a little warmth.
Oh, I know you don't. But you had some like hot boy summer moments last season.
Yeah.
Last off season rather, where I was like, man, I was feeling good about myself. I was like, I'm not drinking as much. I've been working out. And then, one day I go on Instagram, you're like flexing on a boat. You're just being yourself, just enjoying the sun. And I'm like, fuck, man. I'm like, Nicky O is making me look real bad over here. Me and Jeff called me. He was like, dude, we got to get back in the gym.
two things there, Joey. First, I was not flexing at all. That's just natural. Okay.
That's what happens when you're clean cut. You just get the six packs. That's what happens.
I'm only human, but it's always a blast out here in Seattle in the summertime. But, to be serious, no, it's an honor to be able to work a playoff coverage and to be able to do, work for Larry, work for Sports USA and NHL Radio. It really is a dream come true. And though I'd rather, it'd be incredible to do Kraken games, it's just not in the cards this year come playoff time. And that's the way that it goes. But so looking forward to a busy next couple of weeks and into June. Maybe a trip somewhere this summer is in the cards, kind of weighing some options and seeing kind of throwing some things at a dartboard and seeing what can work or what looks good, just kind of enjoying summer. And though I would rather be doing nothing else with my life than being a broadcaster in the National Hockey League, which is truly my dream, it is definitely nice to be able to have some time to decompress. Because the season's long, it's a grind. It doesn't make me love it any less. It makes me love it even more. But just as with anything, it's nice to have a little decompressing time. And so I'm looking forward to doing that over the summer, going back home to Chicago a bit, but also enjoying life here in Seattle too. Because as you had mentioned, the old boat parties and things of that nature, it's a lot of fun. And it's an incredible time. As far as predictions go,
your memory is excellent. I don't even have to bring anything up to you again. You're just firing on all cylinders. This is why you can pay the big bucks.
Almost like I do it for a living, right?
I know, almost.
Yeah. Before the playoffs started, I had Florida representing the East against Dallas representing the West in the Stanley Cup Final.
Interesting. I love the call. Okay.
Yeah, and I felt that watching Dallas all year, especially towards the end of the season, what separates them is two things. First, it's the depth. Both forwards and defense, they come at you wave after wave. And the defense
sounds core. Familiar, right? To last a little bit.
Right, exactly. And the defense core, same thing. There is not a weak link on the back end. Miro Heiskanen, one of the very best. Thomas Harley is a guy that is quickly rising in the ranks of becoming an elite defenseman in the league. So it's the depth. And they had 13 guys that had over 20 goals this year in the regular season. So like the depth and scoring and production has been just phenomenal. And a guy that has impressed me game in and game out in the playoffs has been Wyatt Johnston. Mm. And he bust onto the scene last year. And I like to think of him as a water bug poacher. And by that, I mean the water bug parties. He just kind of pops around each spot. And by poacher, like I think of it in a term like in soccer where a guy scores a lot of his goals around the net and he's not afraid to go to the dirty areas and he can shoot it and he can snipe, but man, oh man, he is not afraid to go to the net and look for rebounds and look for tips and play a hard game too. So he's been a player that has impressed me. So it's the depth, but more importantly, why I think they have what it takes to beat Vegas in the first round and to go further is the goaltending. And Jake Ottinger is the X factor. And I'm a firm believer is that if you don't get consistent goaltending throughout the season and especially the playoffs and you don't have a proven guy, it's going to be really difficult to win and to go far. Now, we have seen more inexperienced goaltenders do some great things.
Look what Aiden Hill did last year.
Exactly. Aiden Hill. And I think about Jordan Binnington back when he was playing for the St. Louis Blues in 2019 when they won the Stanley Cup. So, there's something to be said for guys that are going through it for the first time. But if I could handpick a goalie, I would have a guy that's been around, that's has some playoff experience. And I think that's what separates them in that series and why I think they're going to go to the final. And I actually have the Dallas Stars winning it based on all those reasons. But I'll tell you what. I
love it.
They lost the first two games at home against Vegas.
Yeah, and they took two on the road, which is nuts.
And they went into Vegas, and it's like players say it, coaches say it. It's a common understanding that T-Mobile Arena in Vegas is the hardest rink to play in because of that crowd, because of that atmosphere, and how the team uses it. And Dallas went in there, and they won both games in dramatic fashion. So there is something to be said for that series. Could be the only series that goes seven games.
I would love that series to go seven games.
So that's why I picked Dallas because of their depth. But man, oh man, coming out of that series, that's a bloodbath. Like that. Those two teams
you're going to be limping into round two.
Heavy and physical and can score. So you can play any which way you want to play. So I think it's going to be Dallas coming out of the West. And now, you know, I'm not going to lie, when they were down 2-0, I'm kind of sitting there going,
that just sucks. Yeah.
But hey, they've proven that you can't count them out. And now that's a heck of a series. Yeah. As far as Florida goes, they just impressed me all year. I'm a big fan of Paul Maurice, of his coaching style, but more importantly, his interviewing and his press conferences. He's one of the most thoughtful, insightful coaches. And he did do some broadcasting earlier in between the coaching jobs that he did have.
Oh, okay.
But similar to Dallas is that the depth for Florida is very special for them. You got Matthew Tkachuk. You got Vlad Tarasenko. I mean, you look to the back end and a guy like Aaron Ekblad and on and on and on. And then Bob in goal, who had a great year this year. And that being another X factor for them. And you kind of felt that in order for Florida to get to the next stage of kind of their success as a team, they were going to have to go through Tampa. And that's what they did. The gentleman sweep in five games. It took care of the Panthers. Game five was a 6-1 final score. It certainly wasn't a 6-1 game. Tampa held on, and they took it to them for the vast majority of that game. And the Panthers just found a way to finish. So I think depth, I think goaltending, and those are the two things that are in common for both of those teams. And
Reinhardt's season.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He's the
machine.
He's probably going to have a couple of Brinks trucks pulling up to his house.
Oh, it's happening. Yeah. People were asking us, like, do you think him to Seattle? I'm like, no, because Florida's not dumb and they are going to open up the bank for that dude. And he deserves every freaking penny.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's another guy that can score, obviously, but he gets a little nasty from time to time. And I got a real soft spot for those types of players. So I got Dallas and Florida for all of those reasons previously stated. And, you know, I think it's just been, it's been a real solid playoff so far. We've seen some exciting hockey, and that's why it's the very best time of the year, because there is absolutely nothing in this world that watches like hockey, and it just has a different feel to it come playoff time, which is why I like have it's appointment television and why my eyes are glued to the screen, unless it's talking to you, of course, Joey.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your time. Listen, I can legitimately talk to you about freaking hockey or pretty much anything for hours on end. I've already kept you entirely too long. So I will say that whatever you end up doing in your off time is very well deserved. So by all means, please do some boat shit, post some photos, make me feel bad about myself to where I have to go back in the gym and then text Jeff. But yeah, I'll probably have a beer in my hand still, and that will be my downfall. But no, I really do appreciate your time. Any upcoming broadcasts where people can listen to you do your thing? What do you have going on? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, so as of now, things are kind of up in the air. Just kind of waiting to see how things shake out in the second round. Okay. I'll definitely be kind of putting out on social media, on X and probably Instagram, where I'm going to be for my assignments come the playoffs. So everybody just keep an eye out on there. N Olczyk 16. For those who don't speak fluent Polish, that's N-O-L-C as in cat. Z as in zebra, YK16. And I want to thank my grandpa for that last name. Couldn't just been Smith, but that's okay. I have a very proud Polish heritage, Italian as well. Really excited for the things that are going to be coming up. And whether it's working playoff hockey or watching playoff hockey, aside from seeing the weather get even better here in Seattle and seeing the sun peek out from the clouds, watching playoff hockey and being part of it is a very special thing.
Nikio, you're the man. I appreciate your time. Thank you, as always, for all of your incredible insights. And yeah, please come back on whenever, man. Just, but yeah, enjoy, keep doing your broadcasting thing. Nothing but continued success.
Joey, it's always a pleasure. You and Jeff keep up the great work, giving the people what they want, what they need to hear. And I'm always here if you guys ever want to chat.